Okay. So I start thanking the organizers, as everybody else, for inviting me, and especially Matt, who had wisdom to put me after the two previous talks, so all the necessary introductions were done. And now I try to somehow try to explain to what extent we understand. Yes, here is Matt. Once again, I repeat, thanks to Matt for putting me in this position. So the question is whether we can understand what is going on at RIG and whether we can relate it to this N equal 4 strongly coupled regime, and whether we understand both of them. So I will be speaking about many things, and this will somehow distract your attention. So from the very beginning, I want to say a couple of things which you guys should remember. One of them is, why should we study these plasmas? Because I think it is much easier setting that what was discussed yesterday, for example, by speakers here. Above TC, in QCD, we have this plasma phase in which there is no confinement. There is no such complicated things as strings and pomerons, which we discussed yesterday. There is just a plasma which is in the screen Coulomb phase. I hope that notation satisfies Milga, that it is screened Coulomb phase. And both of them, QCD above TC and N equal 4 conformal field theory, are in the same phase, screened Coulomb phase. And if we will be able to understand the connection between them, here comes Stan, I repeat once again for him, that why we discuss this? Because above TC we don't have confinement. We don't have to think about strings and complicated things like that. We don't understand confinement. Maybe without confinement the two theories are even closer to each other because they are in the same phase. So this, the second question I put here, are they similar? Yes, they are very similar, and I will show some examples of that. Equation of state works very well. Viscosity seems to be working, and my point, which was not mentioned by previous two speakers, is about bound state, so that would be my main thing. But all of them exist in all cases. So so if summarize this brief summary in one sentence, I found with great surprise, actually, to be honest, that what you get from ADS-CFT correspondence not only works for this mysterious theory, but it seems to give reasonable results for QCD as well. Okay, so now actual outline of the talk. So I start with some motivations, and I even go as far as to ask an ancient question, why should one collide heavy ions, the old one, and discuss the situation that what we found is the strongly coupled plasma. And the question will be, what is the strongest possible coupling which we can actually see in QCD? Now, at temperature go to infinity, as everybody knows, due to asymptotic freedom, as our Nobel laureates have shown, of course, coupling goes to zero and we get weakly coupled plasma. That's no surprise. Now, if we go backward toward TC, before confinement happens, you might ask a question, what actually is the largest possible coupling constant when you still can use language of, you know, Coulomb forces and perturbative type of thing with some coupling constant, and what would be the largest coupling constant in that situation? And whether the other type of questions related to that is how strong is strong, at what coupling constant we change qualitatively the regime and go on what we call strong coupling regime. On that we, of course, will learn from this CFT. Okay, now about 2 years ago, this RIG revolution, which I will call it, resulted in this point of view that quark-gluon plasma is in strongly coupled regime at RIG. Started with hydro. I will give one more example of that. You heard it in the morning from Bill Zeitz. The fact that hydro works, which was very important for understanding of it, but not only. We have also very large potentials with these big couplings I will speak about from lattice, and also evidences for bound states. Now, there are also other systems. So one of them, or actually both of them were already mentioned. One is the strapped fermionic atoms, which are put in the regime of strongly coupled regime. And the other is strongly coupled plasmas. I will not speak about plasmas, but just mention that we will have a workshop on this two plasmas in a month. And then I hope that I will spend the last 20 minutes of my talk, if Misha warned me at the right moment, on N equal 4, what exactly is N equal 4 theory at finite temperature and whether we can understand it. So, of course, the previous part is, so to say, what we do professionally, and the last part would be what we did in a couple of months, but anyway, I want to tell it here. What we learned, the most important part of what we learned about this coagulant plasma in this regime is that there seems to be a very large number of bound states, and most of these bound states are colored. You may be surprised that they are colored, but we are in the confined phase, so we don't care. And in some sense, anything in plasma is colorless because it's neutralized by what is called the bi-screening cloud. Anyway, so you should not be surprised. And there would be some ideas how to check it in experiment, so I will come to that. And finally, there would be discussion of what exactly could be a spectroscopy of bound states in this finite temperature N equal 4 theory. Okay, so I start with digression and my 30 years old answer, why should one collide heavy ions? So in those days, the discussion was QCD vacuum versus coagulant plasma. So vacuum was mysterious, complicated, there are vortices, monopoles, instantons, and other non-perturbative objects. These objects shift the ground state energy of QCD and create these back terms, as everybody knows. The Beck terms. This B is not, of course, MIT Beck constant, but a true one, the shift of non-perturbative vacuum relative to perturbative one. The coagulant plasma, on the other hand, screen all these objects because all these objects have electric field, and at least electric field is screened in plasma, that was the thinking, and therefore you will kill them. So when coagulant plasma is produced, this minus B term pushes against and try to expel coagulant plasma from vacuum, as you see. And that recalls this Magdeburg hemisphere, which I show you here, the famous thing. Now, the point is that there is no pump which can pump all instantons and other stuff out of the vacuum to measure that constant. But we can feel, we can pump in instead something else. For example, we can pump in coagulant plasma, and the damn thing expands from pressure gradient will deduce what was the back term, and that would be the great result. That was the thinking. Note that in this argument, a coagulant plasma is considered to be just a dummy. A simple coagulant glass described by perturbative dynamics just to feel this thing because we have nothing else. That's not true. As soon as we get it, we learn that it is not true. So this is my another digression, that one can have absolutely correct theory and still make accidental discoveries somehow. So our complete theory was the, okay, let me go to Columbus first. So he has absolutely correct theory. If you go west, you eventually come to India. But just something was on the way, and there's something, of course, what Andreas Milka just referred as nobody's land, which he didn't expect to find there. And actually, from this map, you can see that Columbus made three voyages like this, but he never even discovered Florida. So you can see how much we also learn at the moment about this land. So that was the idea, that we thought we will collide heavy ions, increase temperature to infinity, get this asymptotically free, weakly interacting coagulant plasma, and everything will work. Then we found something else, much more complicated. So what it means theoretically speaking, that this whole thing is hydrodynamical. People mentioned it already two times. So it means that Rick produced matter, not just 1,000th of gluons per unit rapidity, not a firework of freely moving quasi-particles, but real matter, which means that there is a microscale, something happens with this battery is dying. Yeah? We do have any other?
This thing has an extra.
Okay. So there is microscale, the mean free path, or whatever, and the macroscale, the system size. The macroscale, we know what it is, it's a nuclear size, it's a 6 or 12 Fermi of diameter of gold, which we collide. If the macroscale is much less than this, the system would explode. Now, it would not be a firework or fizzle, as I call it, by a bang. And this is what is basically observed. So there is this radial flow, there is elliptic flow. I wouldn't go into much discussion of that. The main thing is, and that was also emphasized by Son in the previous talk, that if you write hydrodynamics in zeroth order, there is no mean free path. If you write it in first order, there is a first order mean free path, which is a viscous term. The mean free path is inversely proportional to cross-section. This is inversely proportional to cross-section. Therefore, if you have very strong interaction, very large cross-section, you have small viscosity. So if you have strongly coupled system, it shows very ideal hydro with a small correction. That is a little bit counterintuitive. So the stronger the system interacts, the simpler is its description. This is because the hydrodynamics with this expansion in mean free path is actually a strong coupling expansion. It's the oldest, centuries-old strong coupling expansion which you actually use. And the fact that this theory works was really impressive. Now, I wouldn't describe this. This is some examples of this elliptic flow. I would say there is also radial flow and elliptic flow. This is an example of V2. You already seen this. Suddenly, it become a little better on your approach. So this is this V2 versus transverse momentum. It rises. And this is non-viscous hydro, and this is hydro with some small corrections. This is from Derek Kinney, and he deduced this number, and basically, you heard in the previous talk that this is much better than water. So if water floats, but water wouldn't flow if you just take thousand molecules. However, coagulant plasma seems to floating very well. I should also add that by pushing the limits. Here we push a limit to larger PT. It doesn't show, but you should remember that 99% of particles are below 1 GeV, so we speak about a small tail. And somehow at the tail, it stopped working. If you collide nuclei more and more peripheral, eventually this little elliptic almond, which explodes, become very thin, smaller than a Fermi, and it still goes hydrodynamically and only when we go really peripheral, it stops. So we see that even small quantity of this matter behave hydrodynamically.
Igor, the green curve is smaller point than the red one, right?
Well, that's some. Yeah, the green curve. Yeah, I don't know why they go like this. It should be in principle solved with viscosity. It is not yet solved with viscosity. Really make people believe to this stuff is this work which was done by Nicholas DeLassie and Dennis Moller in this paper. So what they did, they took gluon cascade and they took some 1,000 gluons per unit rapidity, which is roughly what was expected, and just plug gluon cross-section corresponding to continuation of perturbative QCD to momentum transfer the order of GeV, which is everybody expected to be just a gas of gluons, and this is what they get. There is no collectivity. All mini jets just fly by. There is no elliptic flow. Well, they say, let's take a larger cross-section. Let's take it to factor 10 larger. This is what you get. Then you get it larger and larger. And what is interesting is that if you make this cross-section larger and larger and larger, it starts approaching this curve, which is a hydrodynamical prediction. So there is a limit to which you can go with very large rescattering, and that is hydrodynamical limit. Now, this cross-section makes no sense. The impact parameter is huge. between these partons and this density. So it clearly is not perturbative QCD gas. Yes, but that really shows that without this drastic increase by nearly two orders of magnitude, you don't get anything. And that means that the idea of PQCD cascade was qualitatively wrong, not just quantitatively wrong. So that is one thing which made this kind of change of mind. Now this is new, this is our new phase diagram, and we travel like Columbus from here to there. So we know what is there. There is weakly coupled carbon plasma somewhere along this axis. So this is a new land, and now we know that this region and that region are not separated by any real phase. They're not different phases. So all these lines are not lines of thermodynamical singularity. However, something remarkable happens. So below this line, for example, this is CC bar. That means below this line, Chermonium is still bound, and after that, Chermonium is unbound. So you can also see what it exactly means that Chermonium gets unbound and why this is not a thermodynamical singularity. But this is our definition that there are these lines which are called zero binding lines, that the binding of the system goes to zero relative to dissociation to two C-quark quasiparticle or gluon quasiparticle, etc. Okay. Now about this gas. And maybe I first return to this. And the idea we expressed in this paper with Ismail Zakhet last summer was that if you have this zero binding resonances, you have a very large scattering cross section, and maybe this large scattering cross section will drive hydra. So we thought that hydra is a phenomenon which is associated with these lines. As soon as we published the paper, we learned that, that this thing works for atoms. Now, this is what Sonal already mentioned. This is initial trap, which is released, and you see that the system explodes. It explodes this direction, but not this direction. Why? Because pressure gradient is larger this direction, not that direction. That looks trivial. It's like a gas exploding. However, it is extremely dilute gas. The distance between atoms is thousands angstroms. If it would be normal gas under this condition, it would just all particles would isotropically fly because there is no rescattering. There is rescattering in this condition because they specially tuned by this Fischbach resonance, which is a resonance near zero, and the cross section under this condition increased like a factor million. After you increase cross-section of scattering by a factor million, then they start behaving hydrodynamically. So that's another example of a very good liquid, which happens when you have this resonance. So how good is this liquid? This is the recent paper, which we wrote also with Ismail Zakhet and a new postdoc, Boris Gelman, about this system. So that is based partly on some theoretical arguments, partly on experiments. So theoretical arguments, I wouldn't give you the argument, I will just show this formula that is supposed to complement this argument which Son just gave. If you have a gas at zero temperature and the only parameter which is relevant is density of that gas, then by dimension, this is the only combination which has dimension of eta. So eta or h bar n should be just a number. It can't be anything else by dimension. And we argued that it should be, in this case, 1 over 6 pi, some argument, which also give 4 pi when there is entropy density here for finite temperature system. Now, I only tell you that this H bar, which appears here, is very important because the argument is based on a certainty principle. This is how closely you can localize particles in momentum spaces, you localize them in coordinate space. So it's not surprising that there is H bar here. There is no C, as Son said, because C has nothing to do with it, but there is H bar, because it has something to do with quantum localization. So we claim that for that system, it should be this limit, similar to Son limit in spirit. Now, this is the data, and it's very remarkable progress. This is from this paper that is done in Innsbruck, but very similar work is done in Duke. Here. And what it is, this trapped atom, instead of releasing this system, you just tap it a little bit, and study its oscillations. So this is magnetic field. The magnetic field switches this position of resonance. The vertical dotted line is where the resonance is. So at this line, A goes to infinity. It jumps from plus infinity to minus infinity, actually. So if you go to the right, this becomes fermions. This is Fermi side, and this is Bose side, so-called. The first paper on this system, by the way, was by Tony Leggett, who indicated that one can go from superconductor, from fermionic description, to Bose-Einstein condensation continuously, and it is indeed continuous transition. But he didn't notice that around, in between the Cooper pair, here there are Cooper pairs, here there are molecules deeply bound. In between, the level must go through zero. Cooper pair is at Fermi energy. This is at negative energy, the binding energy. So in between, the level passes zero. When it passes zero, this is here, you create this new strongly coupled liquid. And that is what Leggett didn't notice. So what you see here in this insertion, this is a frequency of oscillation in some units, and these are the measurements, and the red star is prediction of hydrodynamical behavior if it is simply oscillate with equation of state, which the only one you can get by dimension. So this red star has no error bars, and you see it agrees with data. So it is hydrodynamical vibrations. Here you have the main thing. This is damping of these oscillations, and you see it rises by some to value like 0.5. However, in the minimum, it is 1,000. So what it means is not only the system is hydrodynamical enough to drive expansion one bank, it can do 1,000 oscillations and remain undamped. And why is that? It is not because interaction is weak. It is the contrary. The interaction is maximally strong, and that is why the system doesn't damp. It's ideal liquid. It's counterintuitive, but this is how it should be. And you see, actually, you have seen in the Sohn presentation that viscosities of all materials have this deep diving minima somewhere. So this is an example. And finally, how deep is this? So what is this ratio for this material, for this dashed line, fit to the data? That's about 0.5 plus minus 0.3. So it is nearly as good liquid as Kvaerglion plasma. Sohn said that no known liquid is as good as Kvaerglion plasma. So this is the second example. Now we're joking that we take bets, which one is better? Which will have this ratio less? Yes. So this is this experiments versus weak experiments in some sense. Okay. Now here our new game in town, which is another hydrodynamical phenomenon, which seems to be working. Now this is a trigger jet and the damp jet. I was hoping that Bill will explain that, but I have to. Now the trigger jet is a jet from which you see high PT particles. So you trigger on something like 5 GeV or 6 GeV PT ion on this side. And in order to see that, it should not be very deeply inside the fireball. This is a fireball, and it should go outward. So you trigger on this guy, and then you check what flies on the other side. If you do peripheral collisions or you do PP, you find another jet on the other side. This is a nice PQCD behavior. Now if you go to central golden gold, you find that there are no energetic hadrons on the other side, and if which means this jet, which goes through the diameter, dies. And that is very natural because this DEDX, the absorption in this material is several GeV per Fermi, and the total energy was, say, 10 GeV, and it cannot make 10 Fermi across without being damped. But now we ask, what happened with this energy? Where did it go? So we dump the energy of a jet by something which moves with the speed of light from initiation point to some dying point, and then the system somehow responds. If it is normal hydra, woo! Which one?
Four.
How?
15.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I'll speed up. So you can solve hydra. What happens if you deposit energy in this way? And you find there is a wave which has this Mach cone, and there is a positive energy and a negative counterflow. And bang! Wrong direction again. This is what experiment shows. So this is NTP. NTP, this is a direction of a trigger jet. This peak is a remnant of co-moving particles with the first trigger particle. And this is the backward jet. So you see this back-to-back correlation. This is in phi, so the peak is at pi, which is backward. Now you go to central golden gold, and what you see here, that there is no maximum expected here. And you see something happening here. Now the prediction for this Mach direction is this two, and they really correspond to these two bumps. So probably we see actually this bow wave motion of hydro. Okay, now back to PCD, I really have to speed up and say that there are significant new development from lattice. This is a lattice. And there are two puzzles. One is why there are bound states above TC, which they start seeing, how many of them, and how they affect thermodynamics. I will skip this. And just say that if they measure some potential between static charges above TC, there is no linear potential because it's deconfined phase, and you can fit it as some Coulomb constant divided by R times exponential, so there is some other alpha. So this other alpha, alpha tilde, kind of sits on normal curve, which you expect from running coupling constant, but this one is not, and it really reaches large values above TC. So we have unexpectedly large potentials on the lattice, and we do have states like J-psi, and we do have states like light quark states, which start popping up. And one may ask whether we understand this. The answer is yes. If we use these potentials and use Schrödinger equation or relativistic equation, it actually tells us that there must be bound states, all the S-wave bound states, and that they will disappear, roughly speaking, the charm and the light quarks disappear around 1.6 TC, which is right at the middle of Rigg area. But after thinking a little bit about that, we immediately realize in another paper that there should be very many, like 300 of bound states. Because if the strength of Q bar Q, I take as one, the strength of two gluon attraction is 9-4. This is just Casimir's for the representation. So it should be bound also. But if you take two gluons in a total octet state, well, for example, let me take quark and gluon. So gluon you can view as quark anti-quark. So suppose you have red quark, anti-red gluon, anti-red green gluon. So green doesn't matter, it will be screened by the bicloud, cloud, but red and anti-red would attract each other with a Casimir, which is about one. So if this state is bound, this state is also bound, and it has huge multiplicity of states. So roughly speaking, then we realize that there should be 300 bound states above TC. And that will affect the pressure. Now, this is the pressure puzzle is one of the central. This is the lattice results, which you have seen. And the main thing is that already at 1.5 or 2 TC, you have this something equal to 0.7 or 0.8. On the other hand, the quasiparticles are actually heavy. The quasiparticles' masses are of the order of 3T, both for quarks and gluons. And so the exponential weight of these particles is small. So how can you get the quarks and gluons in this plasma, as lattice tell us, are not massless, and therefore we don't understand how we get this big pressure. And in this n equal 4 theory, this is actually parametric. I will come to that. Now, very quickly, this is a modern understanding of what it is. So we say these are masses. This is twice quark mass and twice gluon mass, these two lines, as a function of temperature in units of TC. So this is critical temperature, that's four times it. This is also units of critical temperature, so 10 means 1.7 GeV, say. So here they are, these two masses, and these are bound states. This is a pion. Pion is massless at TC, and then its mass rapidly rise. It's no longer, this is this new spectroscopy above TC. It's no longer Goldstone particle, so it very quickly become heavy, and dies when it is about 1.7 GeV heavy. This is raw, it does the same. These are some color states. And if you include multiplicity of these color states, you realize these states are real heavy, they're above GeV. So Boltzmann factors are small, but there are hundreds of these states. If you count them together, you get the thermodynamics. So this is P over P over Stefan Boltzmann pressure as a function of temperature. The crosses is what letters tell us, and it also worked well with Rick. So we know this pressure is there, around 2 Tc, which we created. However, the blue line is what quasiparticles give. So you see, we are missing factor 2. And finally, this is pions and rods and all other colorless states, and these are all color states together. If you add them together, you get this. So we say the pressure puzzle is solved. That is very important because that will appear again in CFT. Now, this is final transparency about QCD. How one can verify that? Well, this is level motion as a function of temperature. Now, this is below Tc, this is above Tc. This is our old friend Rho meson, for example, which is 70 MeV. It goes a little lighter, and we know from CERN experiments, we see something like 500 MeV bump. And then it presumably goes up and dies when the mass is about 1.7 GeV, and phi is also about twice heavier than it actually is somewhere here. So we probably can find these peaks at Rick experiments. That would be the opposite of what was proposed many, many years ago, that in coagulant plasma there are no bound states. Now we will hope we will find one. Okay, so now we are ready to move to N equal 4 Suci world. I don't have time for reminder. I have this list of reminders. I just mentioned what the reminders were. One was weak versus strong coupling. Maybe I showed this. The other is summing ladders. So this, we have people in the audience who did that. But okay, I don't have time for reminder. And I only say what is new. New is that we insist there are also bound state. This huge new spectroscopy of bound state exists in this theory too. And we can explain the pressure also by that it is not due to quasiparticles, which are parametrically heavy. It is due to bound states, which are lighter. This I really have to show. This is N equal 4 as a function of lambda that stopped coupling running from 0 to 20. This is 1 at 0. So this is 5 first terms of perturbative expansion. These are the two terms from Klebanov et al. Of strong coupling expansion. So people say there must be some continuous line from 1 going down like this. The main thing is if you dial lambda, which corresponds to QGP, to the strongly coupled QGP, we get something between 10 and 15, something here. And if you read what the number is around 0.8. Look what Letty says, it is 0.8. So we get even correct pressure. And we definitely get it. We definitely get it. Oops, what is it? No, there is something wrong. And we definitely get it from this curve, not from this curve, which means the strong coupling expansion seems to be better in this region where lambda is around 10 rather than this expansion. That is a big lesson. The other lesson is the viscosity, in which I have no time. Now I go about the interaction. So the interaction is given by this Maldacena formula, which of course is Coulomb-like, and only the coupling is different. It is square root of lambda, as everybody knows here, I guess, and different coefficients. And there is also finite temperature, finite Debye screening mass, and one can do effective mass of a particle, which is a string attached to a quark and going to black hole and disappearing. What is important is that this piece of string has a mass, which is square root of lambda times t. And therefore, if lambda is very large, quasiparticles are very heavy. And still pressure is t to the 4. So where are the massless particles? Okay, so this is a summation from Semyonov and Zaremba, and this is how they did it. The only thing which is important to me is that in solution of this Bethe-Salpeter equation, this delta t and delta s, the time, is much shorter than distance. And that is... you can see from that the exchange gluons go with a speed which is lambda to 1/4. So if lambda goes to infinity, they're superluminal. They're instantaneous compared to motion. These guys are not moving again at all, but if they would be moving even with velocity 1, that wouldn't care, the gluons wouldn't care because they move instantaneously. So from this calculation, we understood that one can study bound states, even relativistic bound states, using this potential. And this is what is written here. So you can just dial this potential. After all, the potential is just a Coulomb law. It's just a coefficient is different combination of coupling. But this is a Coulomb relativistic bound state, so we can go to bound states with known formulas. So these are the known formulas for solution of relativistic bound states, say for scalars. What you see here, C is, in the weak coupling, C is alpha. And if you put small alpha, you get binary series. If you put C square root of lambda and make it large, see what happens. The first thing is this. What is this? If C is large, you get negative. Well, that very simple thing. If you have strong coupling, there is falling on the center. And you might ask, is it bad or not? I have no time to explain. In thermodynamics, it's not bad. It just means that all states where this is negative simply don't exist. But there are many states for which it exists. This is a state where L squared is of the order of C squared, or it's of the order of lambda. So if lambda is large, L is also large. That's obvious. There is big centrifugation that can withstand this. So if this is now positive, and C is still much larger than 1, this is about 1, this is about 1, I can ignore now 1. If I ignore 1, these 2 and minus 1 half cancel each other, and it goes opposite. So what you find oscillatory spectrum of states. So this is what the states are doing. It's different L. This is S wave, P wave, etc., etc., as a function of lambda. If they go up, that's because quasi-particles become heavy. And then they go down, each state one at a time, and then they disappear when this square root no longer is positive. It just follows the center. So each individual level have this trajectory. However, the density of states with this L happen to be independent on lambda. And so what we are saying is the matter is not made of quasi-particles which have masses proportional to square root of lambda. They're made of these states. And although each state has a trajectory dependent on lambda, the total density of them is nearly constant and independent on lambda, and that's why we get the partition function. So how much I have? Yeah, that's good. So that is the main thing which I wanted to say. Now we have also some little improvement on top of what Semyonov and Zaremba did. In particular, we calculated a couple of other things in this strong coupling limit. One of them is that if you take P exponent like this and you add sigma mu of mu term, you can get a spin of a particle. And if you take lines which are not strictly parallel but moving, say, with some relative velocity, you can also get spin orbit force. So we were curious, if you have this very strongly relativistic bound states, I repeat so what I said is these are the quasi-particles. Quasi-particles are parametrically heavy because they have this screening, and the screening mass is proportional to square root of lambda. In the language, in the string language, these are pieces of string which go from quarks to the black hole. They're very heavy, they're expensive. However, if you make bound states, and not lightly bound, but deeply bound states like here, their masses, this is some masses in units of T, you will also see that this M is proportional to square root of lambda and C is proportional to square root of lambda, they will cancel. So these states have masses of the order T, that's why, and their multiplicity also give correct number of colors. I don't have time to say. So we are saying that the plasma is made of these bound states, which are very deeply bound relativistic states. They compensate nearly all mass. That's why they're relativistic. So the question is, if you only include Coulomb, how good we are, and should we include other relativistic effects? So we studied the spin-spin effect and spin orbit. It turns out, to our surprise, yeah, naively, by the way, if you do atomic physics, you expand in velocity and you think that this relativistic effect are proportional to V squared. So if you go to relativistic bound state with V of the order 1, they are important. That's not true. Yes, in this case, when it is very relativistic and with gamma factor larger than 1, you will see that these effects are actually small. Also, the famous issue of time delay when there are relativistic bound state actually disappear in this case because the gluon still moves with velocity much larger than 1. So we calculated spin-spin on spiral orbit, and we get some expression, this nicely reproduced textbook result for weak coupling, and this is our result for strong coupling. So what you see here, this is like Mendocino, square root of lambda over x, that's a Coulomb term. The second term is called Ampere term. This is velocity-velocity. It's just interaction of two currents. One minus V1, V2, if they're oppositely moving and relativistic, it just become, this term become plus one again. So it's just double the force. And then there are spin orbit, etc. So these terms have this mu squared. Mu is a gamma factor. So one can see that if it is very relativistically moving, they're actually unimportant. That's because that can be explained, but I don't have time for that. So the point is that we defend our calculation, which only keep the Mendocino-Coulomb term, modulo this factor 2, but all these other effects are not important. And then we also discuss the issue. We try to make one step further compared to Semyonov and Zaremba, considering one more gluon, for example, moving. Then we have equation which has, so there is this integral dt1, dt2, and there is d4x on this vertex, and here there is extra lambda, extra coupling constant. So in order for this diagram to be of the same order as all other diagrams, somehow this integration should give you 1. And that already tells you that each delta x should be of the order of lambda to minus 1/4. And that exactly is the same as the dt here. So in other words, what we deduce from this is the following, that although we are in conformal field theory, and it cannot make actually a string, the potential is still 1 over L, because that's the only dimension allowed. Still the distribution of points in this beta Salpeter is this elliptic one. Namely, this distance is L, but this distance where all other particles are is L divided by lambda to 1/4. So when lambda become much larger than 1, it is string-like configuration, although there is no confinement and no real string, but the distribution of the field is already kind of going in the string direction. I found it very interesting. Final temperature, I have no time to say. So these are my conclusions. One conclusion is that equation of state around this relatively strongly coupled QCD and very strongly coupled, relatively strongly coupled QCD and CFT when Toft coupling is of the order 10 give us both 0.8. The viscosity seems to be small in both. PQCD qualitatively wrong because that will give it much larger than 1 in principle. Now there is this new spectroscopy. In QCD, we claim that some hadrons, only S-wave hadrons like pion and rho, survive about CC. The P-wave hadrons don't. However, there are many color states which seems to show up in spite of them. So we don't have this Hagedorn situation, but we have some other bound states, very many of them. And we also find similar states in N equal 4. However, what is important is that they have orbital momentum of the order lambda. So when lambda increases, the nature of the states changes. But the total number of the states which have masses of the order T seems not to change. I completely forgot to mention, and actually Son forgot to mention, that there is a paper by Starenets and others who, and you, I guess, who calculated correlation function in real time, yes? And then look at the correlation function of stress tensor and see this imaginary part, how it looks like. It turns out, although stress tensor emit like two gluons, so you expect a cut, that you emit two gluons and you have a cut, logarithm. Instead, they have sum of poles, and the poles are oscillatory spectrum with real and imaginary part, right?
I didn't know that, Andrei, but I don't think it's the same.
No, maybe it's not the same, but at least, so we don't know what is imaginary part of our states, but the real part seems to be such that they get equation of state right, and at least parametrically it gives number of colors right, and color squared, and also t to the 4, of course. At any lambda, which is non-trivial because the states themselves are different for each lambda. And there are indications that there are some bound states. What has so surprised me in that paper by Starinets is that the imaginary part of a correlator of two stress tensors is a sum of poles and no cut, which means there is no free gluon propagating at all. Yes? There is no two-body particle cut. There are sum of poles only. Yes? This is very mysterious. So we also found that. I think that's all. No.
Okay, let's thank the speaker. We have time maybe for a couple of questions before the discussion starts.
Yes, I think you were the first.
Would there be any target for MMC?
Can you imagine any direct way to see these states? We cannot do spectroscopy.
Well, that was one of my transparency, which I... Oops, I'm again wrong direction. Actually, this direction is also good. About the leptons. I said, one of the states is raw. We cannot do spectroscopy. Yes, we can do spectroscopy because there are dileptons coming from corgluon plasma. And we can measure their invariant mass. So I speculated that this region would be observed, the end of it. There are some, we recently made a paper estimating how much it would be. There would be a bump here, and that would be a row with a mass about twice the mass of the row. We can do spectroscopy of outgoing the leptons.
Arkady was the second.
No, regarding these bound states, I would say that if you believe that physics is kind of remind n equal 4 in this way, then I would think that the states which would be important for the consideration would be states of of the type of monopole and dyes, because which are not like two particle states but kind of coherent state. Particularly if you go a little bit out of conformal point, we have a hierarchy. We know that monopoles would be the lightest state there. So then experimentally, I mean, it would be like, closer to plasma or liquid of these other states instead of bound state, at least what I'm asking about.
Well, I don't know. And what masses of these monopoles would be? We need particles with masses of the order T which have no lambda in it, right? Lambda goes to infinity and we need states.
Yeah. But the monopoles are in this limit are masses.
Okay. So. Okay.
Yeah.
That we should discuss.
They are lighter than original particles, than gluons.
That's good that they are lighter, but whether they are as light as these states, maybe they are. I don't know.
Okay. Eric has. Has a question.
Typically, when we discuss actually a raw meson, we definitely know that mass is 700 MeV, width is something like 150. My question is, what is the typical width for the particles bound states you are talking about?
Well,
is it much smaller than actually their mass, much smaller than half GeV?
Yeah, we hope it is smaller than it would be like half GeV. Yeah, we speak about rather large mass. And the reason, there are two problems. One problem is a width, you are saying, that it sits in a dense environment. The other thing is that we have to integrate over space-time. So if somebody give us a little piece of corgluon plasma at given temperature, we will get a particular peak at some mass. But since it's exploding and we only have integral over space-time, we can only hope to see. The good thing is that this quasi-particle masses go to infinity at Tc, at infinity at large T, and in this region they kind of flat. The bound states approach zero binding tangent to this line. It's somehow drawn not very well, but it must be tangent. So there is a region of temperatures where it is horizontal. So from this calculation we kind of see the bump in spite of the integration.
What is the typical width? Wait a minute.
Like half a GeV, I would say.
It is parametrically.
Well, parametrical, I don't know. I don't. This whole thing is not parametric. This n equal 4 is parametric, in which case the widths, I would say, in N equal 4 case, the masses are like number times t, and the widths are probably just also number times t. No. Because they go into all possible states with all possible colors. This is not the decay by annihilation like Toft argued, which would be suppressed by NC. That would be the width of the states which from Starenyats are of the same magnitude as masses. They are the same magnitude as masses. There is no parameter actually.
Larry is next in line.
So Eric just asked part of
So just to be honest, yes, we cannot argue parametrically that we will see these bounds. We have to be lucky.
So strictly speaking, none of these are bound states. At any finite temperature system, if by a bound state you mean a stable excitation, there aren't any. I mean, they're resonances, or quasi-particles, or collective excitations, call them what you want.
Right.
Until we know something about the width of these suggested excitations, I mean, it's hard to know whether you should really think of them as relatively long-lived and something that would show up in some dynamical process or not. Now, particularly for your colored excitations, pretend that we could actually prepare pure equilibrium static quark-gluon plasma. For colorless excitations, I could imagine looking at correlators and looking for bumps in their spectral density and saying, yes, here's some sort of collective excitation. Is there any actual signature of what you're calling
color? There is one signature, very simple one, and for the colored one. I argued that colored object, that this colored pairs bound states are 90% of all of them. You can't see them as particle. It doesn't exist. It simply tells you that if quarks scatter on a gluon, there is certain bump in the scattering amplitude. You say, what the significance of that bump? Very simple. When you calculate thermodynamics, if you open Landau-Lipschitz on a part of statistical mechanics which says non-ideal gases, that has a formula which says, Bethe-Uhlenbeck formula, which has that the number of states in a gas is proportional to some integral of derivative of scattering phase over momentum. And that simply means that you can put in a box more particles if there is a scattering phase between particles. So all these states are virtual ephemeral states. However, they allow us, they are bumps in scattering amplitude. And that allows to put more particles in the same box. So they change pressure, they increase pressure. And I said explicitly that when I calculated it increased pressure by factor 2, the trick condition, that is a signature, which in some sense was already observed. Okay? Nobody figured out any other way of making this pressure because quasi-particles are not enough.
So if I could, let me just ask one specific thing. You say what you're calling normal quasi-particles have masses which diverge at TC. I don't understand any content to that statement, because your perturbative picture is completely breaking down there.
Well, perturbative, of course, breaking down. What the hell? Yeah, I don't understand. Yeah, okay, ignore it. The perturbative, of course, breaking down, what I mentioned by these quasi-particles, the masses about 3T come from lattice. They see excitation. You can see that omega squared is proportional to K squared plus a constant. That constant is a mass, okay, for me. Yes, you cannot calculate it perturbatively. You can get it from lattice excitations.
There was a question from Song.
Okay. And then Copton, and then we have to go to the session.
It's more like a comment. The static potential between heavy quarks in N equal 4 super young mills was computed by Su Jong Ray with E.
Yeah.
And by Maldacena. It's not just, it's...
Yeah, I believe I mentioned somewhere in one transparency. You're right. Yes. Not Varas. Yeah.
I just wanted to say that one can probably make a stronger statement that these states in the bound, these bound states in the N equals 4 are not bound states at all, simply because if they were in some sense long-lived excitations, then they would contribute to the transport properties, and therefore this ratio of the viscosity to entropy would be large. But it is very small, and therefore those singularities, they most probably have nothing to do with bound states.
Well, we don't have theory of viscosity, yes? apart from what Son just told us. We don't have any simple picture which will explain how mean free path can be much smaller than distance to the next particle. Yes? This ratio 1 over 4 pi is basically mean free path in units of distance to the next particle. How it can be 1/10? Yes? But we know there are substances where it actually happens, and these gases are the quantum gases, I mean, trapped gases, is an example of that, and coagulant plasma seems to be another example. We don't have any simple theory of that. Whether it's due to these bound states or not due to these bound states, I cannot argue at the moment. Maybe it is. I argued, however, that pressure I calculated due to these bound states, and it seems to be working. But not viscosity. We don't have theory for that viscosity.